Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for another video. Now, today I have an interview with somebody who's a bit of a legend in the magic community. This is one of the top street performers in the world. Not only that, but he is a huge entrepreneur, content marketer. He's been owning a whole bunch of stuff. He's currently launching Tricks Tip, which is like making a huge difference to street performers literally all over the world. We're going to be talking about that as well. I am, of course, talking about the one and only James Hessler. How are you doing, James?
Oh, very well. Thanks, Craig. Thanks very much for having me on the show. It's been a while since I've last seen you, since Blackpool. I'm looking forward to what you talked about, having me on here. I'm actually getting a chance to speak to you about what we're doing, what I'm doing with Tricks Tip and other things as well.
Yeah, we spoke Blackpool, and what you're doing is absolutely fantastic. And it was, so many people talked about it at Blackpool, and it's something that I really want to spend a long time talking about, because I think this is something that will benefit performers all over the world. And there's probably a lot of people that don't even know that this is an initiative that you're launching, and it's an amazing idea. Now, before we get onto Tricks Tip though, I want people to know more about you, because there might be some people in different countries that don't know who you are, and you have achieved so much in the magic community. You have achieved so much throughout your career. So I thought we'd just give people a bit of a frame of reference, first of all, and just talk about you and who you are and what you do. Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, let's start at the very beginning. It feels like you've been in this community since before I can even remember. But what was your origin story? How did you get into magic?
As Julianne just said, let's start at the very beginning. Like Ian Kendall, who you interviewed in interview number 130, where he said he didn't actually start with a magic kit. I'm pretty much the same. I didn't start with a magic kit. My parents didn't give me a magic kit for Christmas or birthdays. But when we moved up to the secondary school from primary, around about 11 years old, my older brother attended a school magic circle, which is just an extracurricular activity. And he came home and he showed me a card trick. Now, I hate the word trick, but for purposes, we'll just use the word. He showed me a card trick. I thought, how the hell was that done? I said, oh, you have to join the magic circle in school to learn. So I dutifully joined, learned how it was done. And then it was just like a lot of people, like the magic sets for a lot of people, just hooked me. And I just got immersed in it, and my school studies suffered in the back of the maths classroom, playing with a card box and all this sort of crap. And then we obviously discovered sleight of hand and so on and so forth. And then he dropped out and went to did other curricular activities, and I just carried on doing magic. Just because I was a very shy lad. I know that sounds weird, standing in front of thousands of people, hundreds of people on a daily basis. But I was extremely shy. And I found that magic was a way to actually ingratiate and talk to people and get, you know, speak to people, approach people. I had a bowl haircut and I had very bad acne, probably why I got a red face, I'm sure. And so that was my initial foray into magic. Then when I was about 18, I stopped and started, puberty and started drinking with friends and women, you know, going out with girls and stuff. Then became a holiday rep, and that's where magic came back to me. Because in the evenings, I was working in a small Greek island. It wasn't Club 1830, it wasn't rowdy stuff. It was family-orientated holidays in a small island called Andros. And I was doing magic at the Greek nights, and then the magic came back and I started doing more and more and more. And a variety of different jobs passed through my life, after that. Then I was in London, and I went to Hamley's, and I saw Marvin's Magic. Mm-hmm. Now, I was listening to what Chris and Grace had to say in your episode 154 about how he started out with Marvin's Magic, but that was getting stuff bought from. I started out with Marvin's Magic by working for Marvin, which is really quite weird. Yeah, and I took over from Lee Thompson, Lee Thompson in Harrods. And then I went off to get married, which a failed marriage, but I went off to get married, and Tim Sayett took over from me in Harrods. And now Tim's gone on to be a pastor, which is, that's another story for another time. And he's obviously living his life and living his dream, which is great. But there's a similarity there, because he used to be a ski rep. He used to be a ski teacher, rather, in Austria, in the same venue, in the same village that I was I was a chalet boy. So our paths crossed without knowing at some point earlier on in our lives. Then went off to a variety of different things. I got married again, then my marriage failed. Mm. You know, Ian Kendall pulls me up about this quite a lot. And then went off to Tenerife. I discovered the street. I saw Nick Nicholas, I'll go back to this shortly, but I discovered the street in 1997. And I thought, well, I've done cabaret, I've done this, so I can do that, but I couldn't. Then in 97, I went off to Tenerife and spent 4.5 years and as a drunk clinging to a rock with 50,000 other people. And then came back to Scotland and then Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and then carried on working on the street, just got better and better and better. Did a Gazo lecture because I was inspired by Nick Nicholas, because I saw him do the Cups in 97. And I just thought, that's the gig for me. Then came back, as I say, from Tenerife to Edinburgh, and then picked up the cudgel and started working the streets. So I wasn't doing the Cups at that time. Did a masterclass, rather, with Gazo around about 2002, 2003. And then my whole life just changed. I was just working the Cups, doing the street. And it's got me to where I've traveled the world twice, three times maybe. Got the opportunity to live in different countries. And yeah, life has been good. Working street has helped me get to where I am, because it gives you an understanding of pack dynamics, crowd dynamics, and a whole range of different things in regard to marketing and so on. So that's been my thing for the past 20 odd years, really. That's the origin story, the digested version.
And you're still working the streets today, right?
I'm not working the streets today particularly, because I'm doing this with you, and I'm working on also working on Trick Tip, which we'll talk about in a bit. But yeah, the street is a hard master. It generates a certain lifestyle, and it's not a lifestyle that it's not a lifestyle a lot of people can contend with. It's very disparate, it's very tenuous. You might not earn any money that day, but you might make up for it the weekend. But it's the things that you do. I made a wish, you know, when you were a kid, right? You say if you had three wishes and all that sort of stuff. One of the wishes I had was, whenever I put my hand in my pocket, I will always have enough money to pay for whatever I wanted at that particular time. And I know it's weird, but more or less, more often than not, that's been the case. And I think that's more down to not wanting for much rather than wanting too much and not having the money to spend to pay for it. Yeah, there's been difficulties. You know, I've gone through three marriages. I like wedding cake. only if it's not chocolate. I don't like chocolate. Only, yeah. That's another story for another time, I'm sure. I'm 60 years old this year. Would you credit it? 60 years old. Started when I was 35.
You're lucky. You look good, man.
Yeah, not too bad, eh? Yeah, right. I had a shave. But my face is always red. So if there's any viewers out there that can say how to get rid of red face, please let me know.
Well, I want to talk, before we talk about Trick Step, I want to talk about the streets, because I've never worked the streets at all. I've got friends, you know, we spoke about Cosmo beforehand. I've got friends that have worked the streets for years. I've never done it myself.
Right, okay.
And I get the question all the time on my channel, should I work the streets? What are the pros and cons of working the streets? So somebody who knows this environment better than almost anybody, I think this is a perfect opportunity to pick your brain a little bit. Okay. So I suppose the first question is, would you advocate any performer learning how to do the streets? What are the pros? What are the cons?
Well, it depends what the context is, I would think. If you're a working, jobbing, professional magician and you're doing gigs and doing a variety of different things that you're doing, you know, trade shows, theatre shows, close-up magic, or you've got a residency, you probably wouldn't have time to work the streets. But if you do find time, working the streets can be an addendum. Working the streets can help you with the other stuff that you're doing. In that, you've just got to be good. You could try out new material, and you could learn more about how to gather audiences or attract an audience, or I don't know if you're working a corporate gig, the audience is already there, but it just gives you, once you've been through that fire of trying to grab an audience and slowing down or speeding up or working your magic, working your show, working your material together, when you actually go into the stage or going to do a corporate gig, if you're starting out, that is, you're more able to relax because you know your material works. It's a great way of learning, or a great way of workshopping new material. And I would advocate that anybody should take the opportunity to do so. Yes, if you've never worked the streets before, you will fail the first time, second time, third time, however many times, depending on how many times a day you're doing it. But there will come a space where you go, that works. And then you could fit that and use that for your other things that you do, whether it's corporate gigs, functions, parties, close-up and so on and so forth. So everybody should take the opportunity to get to the street. I think it's a great thing. The pros are many. You get to just get better because you're in front of an audience. And I think that's a plus, obviously. I can't think of the other pluses.
Yes, I guess you're not beholden to the phone ringing from a client. You know, I speak to magicians all the time and they go, I've got no work. Nobody's calling me. I've got no bookings. Well, you know, as a street entertainer, you make your own work. You know, you want to go and work, pick up your bag and you go out that day and you work.
Yeah. Well, you've hit it on the head there. As a street performer, you choose when you want to work. Obviously, you've got the financial drive. If you've not got your rent, if you've not got your bills, what are you going to do? You want to make sure that you go out and work as much as you can so you build up a buffer. But yes, I like street. I love working street rather than doing gigs, because gigs, you've got to be there at a certain time. You've got to wear a certain, you look a certain way. You've got to say certain things. You can't bail an audience. There's a whole lot of things that street give you. Like if I don't like a show, if the energy is not coming forward from the audience, or I'm not doing it, or it's not happening, or it's not clicking, I quite politely say, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for watching, and then bail that show, and then pull back, and then just wait, and then go out again. Then you can, your work schedule is entirely up to you. It's not at the behest of somebody else at a certain time, wearing certain things, saying certain things. So it is really quite good that way. The downside is you've really got to manage yourself accordingly, financially and health-wise, because you're out there all day. You're out there quite a lot. So you've really got to manage your health and manage your money. In the past, I've made a lot of money in one day and went, oh, great, I can go and get this and get this and get this, or we have a few beers or whatever, especially when Fringe is here and everybody's here for Fringe. But then you've got to realize that's not managing your money. You've got to, just like any other business, you've got to manage yourself accordingly. And I don't think that's a downside. I just think that's general for anybody that's self-employed and do your taxes and yada, 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 and so on and so forth. But yeah, I think the pros far outweigh the cons. So I wouldn't have any other way. I've been doing it for 25 years. I'm 60 this year. I don't want to be 61 doing it, but that's another thing altogether. I don't want to be that old, bitter. It's one of the things that gets you. You could become bitter.
To hate people. Imagine, actually, yeah.
You know, standing in front of hundreds of people a day or whatever, and then looking at them thinking, these are good people, but everybody else is horrible.
Well, you know, the thing that really, I've thought in the past about working the streets.
Yeah.
And the thing that's always made me nervous just thinking about it is building up that crowd.
Yeah.
For me, that seems like the most, because when I go and perform, I get booked to stand in front of like an audience, a corporate or something. And I'm like, I have my audience. They're there. Yeah. They're there to see me. When I'm doing close up, I have a room full of people. They're there. And I've been booked to perform for them. Mm-hmm. When you're working the streets, nobody's there to see a show. They're normally got, like, I know that when I'm going out and about with my family, I'm on a mission for something. I'm going to get Rylan new clothes. I'm going to get Theory a new dress. I'm in that place on a mission. And going and seeing a show is absolutely not part of my agenda.
Yeah.
And the thought of having to stop these people from their busy lives and get them to invest time in seeing something they didn't even know they wanted to see.
Yeah.
That's the thing that makes me most nervous about it. I feel nervous about it, even though I don't do it. Just the thought of actually trying to do it would make me nervous.
Yeah.
Like, is that a problem?
It's okay. I tend to overtalk people sometimes. It's a failing that I've got. I'm trying to learn not to. Yeah, it is. It's when you first do it, you there's a couple of sides to that, or two sides to it rather. When you first get out there to work the streets, when I did it, went in 2001, 2002, because I thought this was what I was going to do. When I first did it, I thought, I can't do this. I was down in London. I was traveling around trying to make something of myself. I said, I can't do this. I can't do this. Stood at Magic Corner in London and thought, I was the only one there. It was a bit windy. I thought, I can't do this. People are going to laugh. But then the back of the head going, well, you've got to pay rent. You've got bills. You've got this. So I went out tentatively. Didn't do much. Then the more failing, the failures got less and the successes got more. And then things just happen to change because you climb a different hill, you see a different horizon, as Tommy Wonder would say, the late Tommy Wonder would say. And then you think, oh, that's the one I've got. And then you get to that horizon, then you see a different hill. And so you keep on going, you keep on marching forward, you keep on getting better. In regard of general public, those that want to stop, stop. Those that don't want to stop, don't stop. And here's an example, here's a case in point. Even as a street performer, during the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, there's a bunch of friends that I've known that have gone on to other things, and there's still, and some of them are still working the street. I won't mention any names because it's not germane. But passing, I was wanted to get from point A to point B because I was doing something and then I was doing a show. So my time was limited to go and do this thing. And I was passing one of the guys in Parliament Square, and within 14 seconds or 15 seconds, he had me hooked. I knew the guy, he was a friend, but his show had me hooked. I thought, screw this, I've got to watch this. And it was just brilliant. And then I just went off and did my show. I forgot what I was going to do later on. But that's happened 2 or 3 times, even with people whose shows I've seen, because there are certain elements of what they do that's just, oh shit, that's brilliant. How they come up with what they come up with and what they do is just phenomenal. So again, if a general member of the public wants to stop, they'll stop. If they don't, they won't. And there is a formula around it. There is a formula. There's a way to get to that point in a street show where they put money in your hat. And it's make them stop, make them stay, make them watch, make them pay. Now, the very strong thread through all of those four elements is the word make them. Don't ask them. Don't, you know, maybe yes, maybe no. You know, make them. So by what you're doing, you're actually making them stop, then making them stay, making them laugh, making them pay, making them watch rather than making them pay. And laughter, for me, that was a slip of the tongue, but laughter in a street show, I think, is one of the more important things, because if they're laughing, they're staying. And if they're staying, they're paying. And I'd hate to go on about the mercenary aspect of it, but that's how
it
is.
At the end of the day, you have to, because that's how you pay your bills. I mean, you're not going out there and doing it for free. So. No. And unlike a normal gig, like when I go and do a gig, I know I'm going to get paid a certain fee. Like, you know, money has to be on the mind of a street performer all the time.
That's why it's called
showbiz. They make their own money.
Yes, I think that's why it's called show business. And the street, it does engender a certain lifestyle. You become a certain person because of it, which isn't everybody. It's not within everybody's core to be able to do that. There's so many different things that have got to happen for you. And the way you look at it, the way you see life, and it just, it fits some people, it doesn't fit others. But having said that, when we asked it at the very beginning, yes, every single magician should take an opportunity to go at least once or twice or three times just to see what it's like. And then hang out, go, in London, you've got a great opportunity because you've got Magic Corner and there's other magicians there. But if you're starting out to actually make a career out of working street, just get out and work as many shows as you can. And you know what it's like when you're doing corporates or functions or gigs or whatever, you've got to work your material. Darren Brown, for example, would do regional theatres. He's got his material, he's a worked show, he'd do these regional theatres, then take that show to the West End because all the knots have been unravelled, all the things have been done, and it's a lot tighter. You know, he's already good anyway, but by the time he gets to the West End, it's a lot tighter. And then in order to get tight with his show, you've just got to put in the hours. 100 shows, whatever, and don't hang out with other street performers, because then, well, that's your camaraderie. But for doing shows when you're starting out, if you're hanging out with other street performers, you'll get one show every 2 hours or 3 hours. Find somewhere else yourself. bang out 20 shows a day, 20 shows, you know, small ones, boom, 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 boom. And then you'll get, it's a quicker road to get better.
Like time, the more you do something, the better you're going to get at it, right?
Yeah, the more you do, the better you get. And the better you get, the more you do.
What about trick selection? Because, you know, you talked about make them stop, make them stay, make them watch, make them pay. I love watching street theatre. I watch street performances all of the time. Every time I come to London, I go to Magic Corner and so on and so forth. And a lot of the time, I suppose I've got two questions on this. Why do so many street performers use cups and balls to finish? Because there's a million other ways you could finish, but it feels to me like almost 99% of acts that I see, it's going to be cups and balls with the watermelon finale under a hat. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just going to be. And secondly, I always watch the acts, and even though there's other stuff going on and it's different and there's, you know, something going on, it all feels like it's a build-up to the finale. It all feels like, I don't want to say the word, this is going to come across, I think, not the way I intended it, but it almost like, so when I, and as I say, I've got no experience as a street performer, when I go and perform, my goal is heavy hitting, magic, magic, magic. When I see a lot of street performers, there's a lot of really strong magic, but there's almost a bit of almost faffing around, like, yeah, whoa, 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 wait, because, yeah, you know, it's all kind of pushing towards this big finale. And the magic I see that leads up to that is kind of like almost irrelevant, because it's kind of, this is what you're going to see at the end, and this is amazing. And that's, yeah, from experience as a spectator, not as an actual performer. Mm-hmm. Am I right? And if I am, how important is trick collection, and why does everyone do the cups and balls? I suppose there's a lot to unpack there.
Right. Oh, wow. I think the selection of your material is also is very important, because it's either what fits you or something that you like to perform. To answer your first question, I can answer that in one word. Why are there so many street performers doing the cups and balls? Mm. Gazzo.
Mm.
You know, and that's not being disrespectful of the man. I just look in a bit deeper on that. I've always thought attending his masterclass and being taught by him, and buying the stuff, the pouch, I had a set of cups from Gary Animal before, which I won on a website he launched years ago. Anyway, being taught by him and spending that 2 days in the masterclass and hanging out, that was the best ever, 300, 400 quid or whatever that I'd spent on magic ever. That was the best piece of money that I ever spent. Yeah, I bought all the props and stuff, but of all the things that I've bought in my whole entire magical career, that's the best thing I've ever bought. Why? Because it put me on a path to get to, you know, this path that I'm on, which is great, which is now leading to other places. But why people also use the cups is because I think it's modular. There's several bits in it. You can either, if you're thinking on your feet and you're trying to build a bigger audience, you slow things down, you can actually put other bits in, you can change things around. So it being modular, it helps you. You've got to be on the ball. Unlike when you're doing a corporate gig, you're there, your audience is there, bing, bang, boss, you do your material, you do your show, and bang, you get in, you walk away. But when on the street, it's sometimes a movable feast. You've got to try and slow down if your audience isn't big enough, or if you're trying to squeeze this energy, which we'll come on to. So it's very, it helps in the doing of that. If you've got a one trick, sorry, I hate the word trick, but if you've got a one trick pony, like for example, I don't know, a straitjacket, that's a different element altogether. But that's just one thing. You get a straight jacket, you get out. But with the cups and balls, as you can appreciate, it's modular. Boom, 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 boom. That's why I think the cups and balls, maybe people watching might think otherwise and leave a comment. But as to the second question, geez. Yes, it is a matter of, this is what I'm going to do next, but first you're going to watch this. Yeah, that's how, that's the bare-faced version of it. But ultimately, but really it's quite a gentle glide up to that. I always liken it to something I've heard, and it's this. Somebody said to me, that unicyclist could get up on that unicycle and juggle those three clubs in 5 minutes. Yes, he could, but nobody would bloody care. There wouldn't be anybody there to watch. So that's why you have this thing. And I also look at it as like a pumpkin seed. As you're pressing, imagine if you've got a pumpkin seed in your finger, right? Between your finger and thumb, you're pressing, you're pressing, you compress, and all of a sudden, psh, you're giving energy to something, and then that energy explodes, and the explosion of that energy is the melon reaching the hat, reaching, you know, the melon on the table. So that's why people do that particular, that's why I do that particular routine. But my set is flipstick to try and grab an audience, general conversation, coins through the table with various bits and bobs on it, a card trick just to lock them in, like a card in hat, card in mouth, and then the ubiquitous balloon swallow. Everybody does that, but you can get 5 minutes out of that, which is pretty cool. And then it goes into the cups. But I'm the only one that does this. I'm the only one that does the cups and balls. I'm pretty proud of this. Nobody else does the cups and balls, the opening sequence like I do. Yes, we all use Di Vernon's routine, similar, which is put out by Gazza with all the blah, blah, blah. But the opening sequence is something that nobody else does. And I don't think anybody would, because I think I'm known for doing it. It's the opening sequence where the balls disappear and reappear is done to the song, Your Song, by Elton John.
Wow.
Yeah, that's I can cool. sing a bit of it for you if you want. But no, I mean, it just fits perfectly. There I was in Adelaide at the Adelaide Fringe Festival, in the biggest, one of the biggest pitches in South Australia. No longer there, unfortunately. And I've just been watching the Moulin Rouge with Ewan McGregor, Nicole Kidman, and a host of others. Not watching it with them, watching them on the screen. And it just came to me. Just, you know, it is, things just come to you. And I just looked at what I was doing with the cups and then thought of the song, and it just fit. It just meshed perfectly because I just swallowed a balloon. So the line is, if it's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. Well, it would be. I've just swallowed 3 feet of cold, hard rubber. I'm not one of those who can easily hide, make the ball disappear. I know it's not much. The best I can do, that was number two. And this is my gift. And the words just really follow through with the actions. And it's really quite a moment. And you get that energy coming up. And then all of a sudden, you produce the melon. Just one last thing on that, because I don't want to bore everybody with it. I know Charlie Caper very well with working with him in South Bank in London many years ago. And then I was traveling up over from Australia, whatever, and saw him on Sweden's Got Talent, the very first magician to win one of these competitions. And his opening act, the fleur-de-lis, just beautiful. His finale, when he did I think his finale was with the cups, and he produced the melon, yeah. But he's got a running gag. His running gag is he makes the bow tie appear somewhere, then you realize it's disappeared. It doesn't disappear, and then you find it reappeared, you find it appeared somewhere, then it's got it. So if you look at the melon being the final, the finale, right, there's the melon. Then he turns the melon around and there's a bow tie on it. And he takes the bow tie off and he's not got his bow tie on anymore. Now, why that is genius is because the melon drop, which is the melon drop, is in theatrical terms, I think it's called a false tab. It's not the finish. And he's taken something which is that powerful to go even a bit higher by turning around and producing the bow tie. It just sends an audience from there up through the roof. And that's what you want. So I tend to wax lyrical about it because it's quite a thing. But yeah, that's really, I think.
This is no longer an interview. This is a masterclass into working. This is cool. So do you want one other question on trick selection? Yeah. I find it very interesting. Got a specific act there. Do you ever change the material in the act, or do you basically just keep it? Because for me, I'm always changing my things around because I get repeat clients, so I'm having to go back and they want to see something different. Restaurant workers are exactly the same thing. But when you're working the streets, I imagine you've got a completely different crowd every single day. So is there any desire to change your trick selection for any reason, like boredom of the same tricks, or do you basically just keep the thing the same because you know it works and you know it's going to generate that hat, which is ultimately the most important thing?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And it's what I thought about when I was getting to the end of my career, is where, to some degree, is a thing, something I thought about, pardon me, at some point in it. But then for me, I realized that what I'm not being self-aggrandizing here, because it's just, I think it's just, you know, if you think about it, it's how it happens. I'm good at what I do because I've done it for so many times and done so many years, done so many shows. And the reason that it's got that is because I've worked on the same material. What I do change, I was always thinking, sorry, if I change, it's still me on the street, it's still me doing magic. It's still, people still recognize it as me doing magic. So it could be doing this or it could be doing that, but it's still me doing magic and being entertaining. And I'd rather be, and if I did want to put something new in, that would be a learning curve that I could put in a new thing once every day or one show, just one thing. But I didn't, I haven't, I've kept it pretty much the same. And it just works for me. I'm not saying that should be for everybody, but learning new magic, yeah, of course, I like to learn new magic just for my own edification. And something else might happen during the show, you might throw that in, But what gets thrown in on a regular basis is dependent on the energy of the audience and the connections that we've made. I might throw in something like a coin under the watch. If I'm doing coins through the table, I might do a precursor with, if there's a smaller number of people, to help build a not larger audience, and I spy the perfect watch. Bring them over, load the coin, vanish the coin, do a couple of things, and then it's under the watch. Or I might do card before I do the card in the hat, card in the mouth. I might do card in the box, which is just a simple tin box, using the Jennings optical toss to get the card out. Nothing, not a major product box like a Kennedy box or anything, just a small tin thing, but yes, for me, I keep the same material because it works. And it is a different audience. Well, you still get, but there's a thing, you do get people coming back. Like, for example, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Oh, we saw you last year. You were awesome. Are you doing the same thing? Yeah. Wonderful. Great. Can't wait. You know, that's how it is. But if you're doing repeat client, if you're doing repeat gigs and it's the same clients, yeah, I think it's incumbent upon you to actually do new material. And which is, I can't imagine the amount of magic that everybody gets through in regard of doing that, because there's so much magic available.
Yeah, yes.
So for me, coming out of this, yeah. Oh, you're a creator yourself.
Yeah.
And you've got some phenomenal pieces of care out there, mate. Phenomenal pieces of care out there.
Oh, thank you, James.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Thanks very much.
Yeah, well, it's true.
I'm more than happy to talk about my tricks. Let's do that.
Yeah, quantum deck, matter of fact, and Lloyd, I saw Lloyd's review of it, and I saw the furore. Pardon me, I read a bit about the furore that came out in regard of, you know, the advertising stuff. And I said, some people, no disrespect to anybody, but some people just don't get it. Given in a real situation, you could do the illusion, do the performance, and yes, you can hand them out, and you could see nothing. You know, it's a very well thought out concept, actually. Not that I know much about it, but from what I've heard, it's a very good concept.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it works for me.
Yeah,
it does. But this is not about me. This is about you.
No. All right. Okay. We started the Craig Petty Appreciation Society right here, right now. Okay. So what else can I tell you in regard of street? If you are considering going out in the street, and I know you've had Freakon as well, which is who I've worked with before, you've got to, if you're working the street, the stuff you buy has got to last a lifetime. You can't have stuff breaking on you. So you use stuff that is doesn't require batteries or anything, apart from your amp, if you're using an amp. I don't need an amp because I've got a voice. But yeah, you just want to make sure that the stuff is sturdy, like the cups I've got that I got from Gary Animal, and there's a story in there as well. And they're copper and brass, and they've been beat to buggery, and I know some people want to get their hands on them, but nah, I'll just keep them. And the pouch that I use, made by Gazzo himself. So the stuff you use has got to be strong and sturdy, because it's going to get a lot of bashing. You know, I went to Blackpool one year, get this, and there was a stall selling a pouch, you know, a form of pouch, a filigreed lovely piece of stick, a lovely wand, and burnished copper cups. So I picked up the stick and tapped the cup. The guy behind the counter said, "Oh no, don't do that. You'll dent the cup. You'll damage the cup. These are street cups, right? This is a street set." Well, okay, I won't dent the cup, because if that street set would not last 3 months on the street, you've got to have stuff that can take that. It's stuff that you take out has to be strong. The material, the actual props themselves. Don't know why I got into that, but there you go. That's three. What
really
else?
Good advice, though.
Sorry?
It was really good advice, though.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. What else can I tell you? Bit of the backstory. I always say in my show, I've traveled the world around three times. It's actually two, but, you know, theatrical license. I've traveled the world around the world three times to speak four languages. I've got 7.5 million views on YouTube, which I do. I've been to America, Dubai, Oman, Malaysia, Egypt, lived in Africa, been to Nigeria, spent time in Australia and lived in Greece and speak four languages. And this is my first time here back, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, the reason I mention that is as a kid, this is way before the backstory, as a kid, I lived in Africa, Nigeria. We had to evacuate because of the Biafran War. Weird, right? Then as an older child, we were in Persia before it became Iran. And I got my appendix out there. Then I was a holiday rep in Greece at some point. And we evacuated from Nigeria because of the Biafran War. And so where we were, things went to shit. We were in Persia. Then the Islamic Revolution came and Khomeini came in and became Iran. So where we were, the country went to shit. Well, not shit, but, you know, I'm just saying that hypothetically, just as a path. And then I worked in Greece as a holiday rep. And then I left and the bottom dropped out of the holiday market. So wherever I go, things go downhill. So I'm a bit worried about your viewing figures.
Right.
I just want to share that with you, if that's all right.
And let's talk about traveling the world. I mean, that's got to be a major pro of being a street performer, right?
It's brilliant. There's no two ways about it, Craig. It really is something else. I mean, you've done corporate gigs where you get traveled, where you fly over here and fly over there.
Yeah, but normally it's like you go over, you stay in a hotel, you do the gig, you stay in the hotel, you come back. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not as glamorous as it sounds on the surface, but I imagine as a street performer, you get to go wherever you want to and work your own hours in a way.
Yeah, true. There is that. But when we're traveling abroad, when I was living in the UK, I would travel to Australia for the winter or for 3 months specifically for the Adelaide Fringe Festival, and did that for several years. So I was traveling from the UK to go to Australia to do that. And it was great. Yes. I mean, there's no two ways about it. You're master of your own space. I like it here. I'll stay here. I don't like it here. I'll go over there. I don't like it over there. I'll go over there. But when you're doing a corporate gig, obviously it's a completely different ballgame. But that's your purpose for being there. My purpose for being in Australia is because I want to carry on working. I might not come back with any money, but certainly my bills would be paid here and I'd be able to live over there. Whereas if I wasn't working because it's winter here, I'd fall into debt. And then people say, well, you'd get a regular job. Really? A real job? What's that? Nah. Anyway, so yes, there are certain elements of travel that really do invigorate one. You just get to see so many different things, experience so many different cultures, experience so many different environments and ethnicities. And it can help make you a better person, because you're seeing the world, and you might not be getting paid to go there, but you certainly work when you get there. And I kept on going from the UK to Australia for several years. Then I fell in love and married a beautiful woman. Didn't work out, unfortunately. Well, or fortunately, you know, because I'm somewhere else in my life now, which I'm extremely happy, content, and life is really, really good. But then, so I was living in Australia and then coming back to Edinburgh to work the Edinburgh Fringe. So instead of going from Edinburgh, from the UK to Australia, I was going from Australia back to the UK. So it's quite a turnaround. But you can see it. It's a great thing. It's a great thing to be able to do. But ultimately, the more you do it, the easier it gets and the easier it gets. It doesn't become mundane, but it's just like getting on a bus. But when you get there, it's like, you know, you get to see, especially for festivals. I don't go and travel around the world just to go on the street corner, some of the festivals and so on and so forth. So I'm not that gregarious, but you do get to see and bump into a lot of people that you've known for years that aren't here. And then like when the Edinburgh Fringe happens this year, it'd be like 100 people signed up for it already. So you get to see them and you get to see your friends, you get to have a great time, and a great time is had by all. if you know
that's amazing. That's awesome. That's awesome. Here's a question. What do you do if you start a show, you're halfway through the show or a quarter of the way through the show, whatever, and you've only built two or three people up? Do you just basically cut it off and go, well, thanks very much, bye, and save your energy? Or do you continue hoping that more people will join?
Again, there's different elements. That's a very good question. Shoot to bail or not to bail the show. If you're halfway through and you've only got three or four people watching you, that would be the time to go as politely as you can, without a shred of bitterness. And sometimes that turns into anger. It'd be a nice thing to go, I've just done this for kicks and giggles, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for watching. Have yourself a great day. Look after yourselves. And we'll start again in half an hour, whatever. But thank you. Bye. And then you pack up your stuff and you go off. And if you've had a really shitty day, or you've just got a bit of anger because of something else, that might turn out completely differently. Like you could say, I've heard another performer try to get his energy up. And so instead of him being way, way up in his energy, he's brought it right down. And he said, well, you're not giving me anything. So, I mean, I could have more fun putting my dick in a lawnmower. And then he just packs his stuff and buggers off. You know, I have actually said twice, once in a street show in Adelaide, it was just street because I was living in Adelaide. There was somebody who was really giving me shit, really giving me jip. Yet it was the sort of person who'd walk across the street to avoid. And I just swore at him. We didn't have much of an edge. There were no young children there, but I swore him in uncertain terms. That wasn't an edifying moment. And then there was another time, and other people can attest to this. It was a busking gig in Genting Highlands in Malaysia. Sounds glamorous, right? But it was on stage, not the greatest environment. There was music playing on the tannoy. We were trying to do shows over the top of that. It was busking shows. And we did get a retainer and accommodation and a flight, but it was still busking shows. And I shouted out, I don't know if I can swear here. Can I swear here? Okay.
Yeah.
It's my worst moment. And now you've got to picture the scene. There's not many people watching the show, but there's music over the tannoy. You can't really do anything about that. We've tried to shut it down. So I was mic'd up. And I said, if the person listening to this doesn't turn that music off now, I'll find it where you are, rip your head off and shit down your fucking neck. And then I don't think I got booked from by them again afterwards.
Surprise.
Stories from the pitch. Yeah, there's a site called Busker Hall of Fame where you can actually shed loads more stories about street performance and so on and so forth around the world and what they do. It's really quite cool.
I bet there's a million funny stories that you've had over the years.
I'm sure. Yeah, there are. I lifted a hat. There was no melon because I forgot to load it because I got distracted. I lifted a cup. There's no orange because I got distracted again. And I'm trying to think of some of the cooler stories. There's too many to think about. There was one time doing a show in Edinburgh. Scanned the crowd, scanned the audience because it's an audience by that time, not a crowd, because a crowd is just a group of people. An audience is something that you bring people together to. You manage it, you malleate it. Standing in front and centre was Jason Statham. Now, from the Trainspotter, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, and nothing major happened, but it was just for me. I'm not one to go up and I just like the fact that he's watching my show. I think he had a kid. I think it was him. But if it wasn't, it was a bloody good double. But I just scanned the audience and went. He went. That was it. He didn't want to be recognised, obviously. I didn't want to pull him out or pull him up for being here or whatever. It's just small instances like that. But I'm sure that if I was to rack my brain, if we had more time, I'd think about many, many, many more. But one story that does come back to mind, and it's not a street story, and I know it's not a street story, but it comes back to when I was living in Africa. Two stories, actually. And we were going to school and in the Land Rover. You don't get this in Newton Grange. You don't get this in London. You don't get this anywhere in the UK. Bloody elephant crossing the road. And then carried on. The other great story is when we went to Persia, I contracted, as I say, appendicitis. And then the scar opened up and it was infected. And then my mother said to me, what do you want? Because I've been such a good boy, I said, like a rally chopper. I never got one because it was, I had to order it. I was impatient, got a guitar. My brother picked up the guitar and started learning it. But then when I got back to school, the teacher said, hands up, anybody's been away on holiday. Right, okay. So Johnny, where'd you go? Jimmy, where'd you go? Blah, blah. James, where'd you go? Persia, miss. It's now called Iran. I got my appendix out. So it is related to street, because he said, would you like to come up to the front of the class and tell us all about it? Yes, miss. So that was my first public speech, probably, in primary seven.
That's awesome.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Yeah, I don't think I've mentioned that to many people. But street stories, there's a myriad of them, but my brain's gone at the moment, to be honest, Craig. I can't think of any.
Oh, no, that's absolutely fine. You know what? I've noticed, one last question before we move on.
Okay.
I've noticed a lot of street performers end up going and working in the trade show environments.
Yeah.
Mm. Is that because the skill set is crossed over? Because I see a lot of close-up guys that try to do trade shows and they just fail miserably at it because they're just treating it like a walk-around gig. And the ones that I think that do it the best are the ones that build up a crowd on the booth.
Yeah.
If somebody's watching this, and maybe they're not that interested in being a street performer, but they want to be a trade show performer.
Yeah, this is where street could help them, because as you'll know, doing trade shows is about getting the car, getting the leads for the people that are employing you, and it's about getting a large crowd. So yeah, there are some transferable skills. Obviously, you've got to be at a certain place at a certain time, doing a certain thing for a certain bunch of people, rather than the street, just do whatever. The transferable skills are quite strong. You've got to build a crowd. You've got to build an audience. You've got to build a crowd. And from that, you build an audience, different kind of audience, because what you're looking for them, from them rather, sorry, what you're looking from them for them is their business card to go in the bucket or to follow the lead process to pass them off to the salespeople. And you've got to integrate. This is not as easy as it looks, I'm sure, or easy as it sounds. You've got to integrate the routining around the strap line or the company's message. As if you're a performer anyway, I would think that you're quite creative and creative enough to be able to do that. So yes, there are very much, there's transferable skills, definitely. Have I done trade shows? Did one, didn't work out, not my mitre, didn't do it. That was early on in my career anyway, so I wasn't that good, I wasn't as good as hopefully where I am now. Would I do one now? Nah, not for me. Again, it's the being at a certain place, wearing a certain suit, doing a certain thing for a certain people at a certain amount of time. But yes, there's definitely transferable skills, which goes back to if you're a magician, if you're a performer, an entertainer, and you're not already doing trade shows and you want to do that, maybe going out to the street and trying to generate and grab a crowd and then make them into an audience, which is two different things. That might be of help to you when you actually go on to do trade shows. Because you've always got to, if you're starting out, you've got to level up all the time. You've got to level up all the time. And that would be a great way to do it. So that would be, if there's one thing I could share, if you want to do trade shows and you're not doing it already and you're young enough and you've got a whole life ahead of you, go to the street, do something on the street, learn from the street, and then segue that into getting on to doing trade shows. That's a good call, actually, yeah. Very much so, transferable skills.
Let's talk about COVID. Let's talk about the pandemic, because, well, a lot of magicians, myself, switched to virtual shows over the pandemic. And I got really busy doing virtual shows. You can't do virtual street shows. So how did the busking community cope over COVID? Was it a difficult time for you guys?
Well, personally, I was lucky enough to actually qualify for Universal Credit. And I'm lucky enough to be living in a house where the rent isn't as much as it could be. And I'm lucky enough to be staying with who I am. So we worked together. You know, times were tough. When I wasn't out there doing shows or anything, I didn't get into the virtual shows thing. I didn't do that. But some performers I know did actually do Zoom shows. And for example, there was the World Buskers Online, blah, blah. I can't remember the name of it. It was a couple of years back. And that did pretty well. So it was a virtual tour around the world, which it was quite a lot of tech involved, but people got on board with it and actually managed it accordingly. But on a general level, I think we just struggled because a lot of us don't pay into a pension. Well, I certainly don't. And so therefore, or have the required insurances and stuff, because it's very much hand to mouth for a lot of people. And they struggle. Yeah, they just struggle. I can't put it any other way. And thankfully that's passed to a large degree. And they're still out there actually doing shows. A lot of people just didn't work. And they just, for me, what I did is I created something. I created a product, Ambition Omnibus. I was pretty good with green screening. And I created this membership, created this product which people can buy, which is called Ambition Omnibus. I'm not advocating that you do, because it's there and I'm going to be using it for a different purpose. But I spent about 6 months putting this together, all the videos, creating my own website and WordPress, getting a shopping cart and ready, putting all that together. So it's there and it's available to buy. So that's what I did for 6 months. Have I made many sales? Nah. But it's still there.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. But that brings us on to your new product, which we spoke about at the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
Which is Tip Tricks, right?
Trickstip.
Sorry. And this is to do with getting paid after a show. Is that right? Because before I heard about this, I said to somebody, street performers are really going to struggle because we're moving into like a cashless society now where people aren't carrying money around with them. So, you know, the whole point of a street show is to have a hat at the end, and people legitimately haven't got money in their pockets. So it becomes difficult.
Yeah.
And you've got a product that solves this. And that's what I said at the very beginning. This is something that people all over the world should really be paying attention to. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah, of course. Thanks for mentioning it, Craig. I'll try and keep this as didactic as possible because they can go off in so many different threads. First of all, the inception for Trickstip came from seeing somebody else do this for Busk. It's called busk.co. And they're still there. And I'm actually I'm on the board of directors now for that, which is great. I did have my own product, which I didn't follow through with, but that's for various reasons I won't go into. But then I started looking at magicians rather than just buskers. And how can I put this? Yeah, we are entering a cashless society, and COVID has put the kibosh on, people think it's the kibosh on physical currency. People are thinking rather that cash could be a carrier for COVID. So people had to have a way to actually monetize it, to put the hat out. And there's a variety of different ways, which I've looked at a lot of them. There's card readers, they work. This is now when you're actually getting out to do shows, not because of the pandemic. There's card readers, there's Venmo, that's in America mostly. There's a variety of different places. There's Patreon, there's Buy Me a Coffee or coffee.com or .whatever. And now there's Trickstip. So what's the difference? And there's PayPal. You could just create your own PayPal link and have your own PayPal QR code. It's not difficult to do. So what makes Trickstip better or different or better to use? Well, Trickstip, before I go there with Trickstip, why would I want to do this with so many people in the field? They're all approaching different niches, all approaching different spaces. So I thought magicians aren't using this to a larger degree. Then I start to think, well, where would they use it? If you're doing a paid gig, that's a no. If you're doing a residency, possibly on your business card. But if you're doing a close-up gig or a function, you're getting paid anyway, so you can't ask for, you're not going to ask for tips. But we're in the social media age now. And if you put a video up with a QR code, that's there forevermore. And if you actually bottle it, if it's a long-form video, and we're not talking about TikTok here, short-form videos. If you do a bottling speech, which is where you talk about money, and make it brief enough for people, and position it in the correct place in your video, and then if you know YouTube as you do anyway, and you have that come up. Sorry, that's talking magic. That's an edit there, and you have the QR code come up, obviously with a link at the bottom, a hardcore link, hard copy link. With so many people watching it, if you've got a good viewership, and you appeal to the person in the right way, as we do when we're on the street, there's a good chance that somebody will go, yeah, I'll give you a tip, mate, boom, and you get tipped. So with YouTube are doing it already, but YouTube, in order to beyond their tipping platform, for want of a better expression. You have to have fulfilled the partnership requirements. And I think that's 1,000 watch hours or 1,000 people or 2,000 watch hours, I'm not sure. And in order to tip that person, I think you've still got to be have a YouTube or a Google account. So that's quite a thing, that's quite a barrier. And also, so I've heard, YouTube take 30% of the tip. So it's a great idea that they've got, and I think it's still in beta, but there's 30%, you have to be a member, and they have to be a member. So, and Patreon, you have to, there are so many different caveats that you have to fulfill, elements that you have to fulfill in order to tip something. So where TricksTip makes a difference is anybody can tip you. You don't need to be a member of or have an account or anybody can tip you. So, okay, so that's just like somebody else. Yes, but with TricksTip, if the spectator pays the transaction fee, the person who they're watching gets the full tip. Because there are transaction fees. For example, we do take 10%, but we try and fill that 10% back up by the spectator paying a transaction fee. And if they do, and 60% of the time they have been doing, you get the full amount. But also, and this is a cool thing, because I'm only doing this for my products, so the things I've created at the moment, because I've not got the software, I've not got the platform changed enough to do what I want to do later on, like version 2 or version 3. The spectator is then provided with a couple of links to a couple of products or to an ebook, which they get for free anyway for paying a transaction fee. And so there's various other things that they can upsells or onsells. Now, the beautiful thing about TricksTip is you might not have a product, but you've just been tipped. But when the spectator gets to the center of the thank you page and they see these offers, they might choose to buy one of those. And if you've got that on your thank you page, you get a commission from somebody else's product. It's affiliate sales. So I'm seeing the tip as being the lead generator for this person to be able to look at this. And if they buy, then the person that got them there will get a commission for using it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That's really clever. Yeah.
And this is where Ambition Omnibus comes in. I've got that up at $24.95. Now, if a spectator likes what you do and then they see this as one of the things that's available to them and they purchase it because you've sent them there because they tipped you, you get 60% of that sale. So for every sale that's made through the link that you sent them because you got tipped, you'll earn £14.95. And people think, well, why would you give so much commission away? Because if you give so much away, then you're more apt to use it. If you're more apt to use it, you make more money. If you make more, so if I've got 100 people doing it, I've got 100 people times that £10, you know. So I've got my back end covered, but they're making money as well, which is great. I think it's the juxtaposition of, I don't want much from what you've given me or what you've got. I just want a little bit so that you can have the majority of it.
That's great.
Yeah, I think it is. It's there now. We are launching. We did a rollout. You obviously saw the posters and the banners and everything in Blackpool.
You guys were everywhere at Blackpool. Like, yeah. I couldn't go into a room in the Winter Gardens without seeing like every single table covered in
bar mats, posters, yeah, all sorts of stuff. Even in the bloody hotels.
I found one in the toilet. Yeah, I found one in the toilet. They were just like everywhere.
I know. That's the thing. I spoke to the Ruskin and asked them if I could put up a banner and put up beer mats. And they said, yeah. Now I'm thinking, there were so many dealers in the Blackpool Convention. Why isn't anybody else doing that? Because that's where all the magicians are. Why isn't anybody else advertising or promoting their stuff? I don't know. Oh, yes. Well, one other thing. Sorry to interrupt you, Drake. One other thing about TricksTip is it's free. It's free to use. And yes, we do take 10% off the tip. But if the spectator pays the fee, transaction fee, that person, that entity, the magician, gets the full amount.
So I'm a spectator at a show. Excuse me. I'm a spectator at a street show. How would I use How would I use the platform? What would happen?
Right. If what you would do is you would print off a banner, you generate your QR code, which is just a a graphic of the URL. It's just a graphic design of a URL, like a www.htb, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It's just a graphic representation of a URL. And you would have that on a banner. So you hold your banner up, people would scan that with their phones and then go straight to the phone and go, oh yeah, I can tip you 5, 10 or 20. And then they press that button, you go through, then you get sent to the cart itself. And it's quite a simple matter. Some people have actually got autofill on their phones anyway. And you can actually pay by PayPal, Google Pay, Apple Pay or card. And then several things happen. With the way we've set it up at the moment, if they tip a £5 note, if they tip a five, the spectator then gets sent to the thank you page and they also get to access a particular piece of magic that they can do themselves. If they tip 10, they get 2 pieces of magic, get tip 20, they get 3 pieces of magic, and they also get the ebook as well anyway. And what happens for the performer's side is you get an email saying, hey, you've been tipped. And you've got your own dashboard that you can look in on trickstip.com in your own account to see how much is coming in, where and when's it coming in, because we pay out every week. Because you can, as you can imagine, even with the technology we have, if you sometimes going from one bank account to another bank account still takes a couple of working days, especially if it's international. So we pay out every Wednesday. But if you get tipped on a Tuesday, you still get paid out on Wednesday because we've got a buffer, because that money that you be tipped will come in later on, because that's not your concern. The magician's concern, or the users, or the account holder's concern, is we just want to provide the best service that we possibly can given the parameters that we're working under. So that's how you get paid, and how the spectator gets gets access to these things as well. I did have a banner, but I didn't bring it into here with me. If you go to trickstip.com/, well, we'll leave that because I want to put a link in for something else as well. Trickstip.com, just have a look at it.
Okay. And you said that 60% of people are paying the transaction fee. Does that come up as a question when they pay? So let's say they select £20. Does it then come up something like there's a transaction fee that will be charged? Do you want to pay this yourself? Or how does that work?
Well, that works. People would call it, in marketing terms, they would call it a bump offer. But it does do what it says it does. And you can either choose to pay it or not. When you get through to the page to tip the performer, put your details in, your whatever bank, PayPal, Google Pay, Apple Pay, or card, there's a little box there that says, do you want to pay the transaction fee to make sure the performer gets all of the tip? And you could choose yes, or you could choose no. And if you choose no, you don't pay that transaction fee. You get the option to pay it or not. And this is something that was levied at me. They said, James, why would somebody watching Joe Bloggs want to get an ebook from you? That's a good call. Well, the way that we've couched it, the way we've presented it is, hey, pay the transaction fee, and as the people that are making this possible, we'll give you this. So it separates us from the performer, but they get access to something that they might find valuable as well. Right. And the transaction fee does get paid. We get a little bit as well, which helps us keep the lights on at Central HQ.
I suppose sending that ebook over is an incentive for people to tip more, because if they're seeing when they scan that banner, you get one thing for £5, you get 2 things for £10, you get 3 things for £20. They might be thinking, well, okay, I'll pay 20. I'm going to get all 3.
If you're interested in magic, but then again, there's no pre-cut. There's nothing to say what those 3 things are. So these are elements that we're working on, and we're working on other elements too. But that's the way it goes. Yeah, it is upselling through the button. So our idea is, if we can help the magician or the performer, the artist, make more money doing what they do, that gives them more time to enjoy what they want to enjoy. And that's just standard practice, I think. And we take a little bit because of what we do to help keep the lights on. Then they'll try and upsell. Yes, you tip 5, you get 1, you tip 10, you get 2, you tip 3, you tip 20, you get 3 particular masterclasses. And you may not be interested in magic yourself, the person who's tipping you, but they might have a niece or a nephew or a cousin or a relative or a friend who might, and they can pass that on to them. And they get unlimited access to, it's not like a week's access or a 2 weeks access to this particular thing. The tutorial and the masterclass they look at is there forevermore during the launch period. Anyway, after that, we might actually change that, but I'm not sure. But they get access to all of this. And the ebook is extant anyway, for the fact that you're using the service, we'll give you an ebook anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's there for everybody, not just for those who pay.
And is it available? Will it work when it's launched? Will it work all over the world?
course, you've been talking about pounds.
Yes, we're in at the moment. We're doing it in pounds. Then we will have an international launch. Surely it will work anywhere. It's the internet. But if you're paying in American dollars, you'll be paying you'll be tipping £5 or £10 or £20, or maybe we'll change the amounts, but at the moment that's what it is, 5, 10 and 20, because that's what it is on the street. And I'm sure people watching a video might not think, I'm not paying that £20. They might not, they might tip you £5. But here's, I forgot to mention this. It does work anywhere in the world, but it is still at the moment just in pounds. Our software is, the platform, we're actually working on it just now. My developer's working on it to try and change certain things about and actually make things better. Because nothing, you don't go into this thinking, that's it, it's boom, it's done. It's just like anything, like even building a show, right? That's that. Or I can see, I want to do that. So you go up there, then you want to do that, and you want to do that. So things change. But here's the beauty. You can put it on your phone. You can put your QR code on your phone. You can put your QR code, print it on a business card. You can put your QR code, if you are going to take the street, on a banner that you hold up. And you can put your QR code on a thing that comes up on your video. Because if you're already video editing, you'll know how to do this. And the thing is with the phone, let me ask you a question then, Craig. I know I'm batting around left, right, and center here. Nice. But in your social life, when you were younger, which is not so long ago, you've been out with friends. You might have gone loaded with beer with different pieces of magic, right? And I'm sure you've had this opportunity or this space where you're with friends and somebody that you don't know sees you doing some magic. And, oh, you're a magician. Can you show us a trick? I hate the word, but you know what I mean. So being who we are at the time of life that we were, we might take the opportunity to go, excuse me, guys, I'll be back in a minute. And you go and you do some magic because you love doing it.
Yeah.
But now we're carrying phones with us, everybody. Oh, by the way, put the QR code on. It's just an image, and you put it on your phone. This is what I do for them. But listen, buy me a beer. That's what. Just buy me a beer. But my beer, £5. Or maybe buy me two beers. Maybe three people will buy you beer. Maybe four people will buy you beer. You don't know. Maybe somebody will buy for four beers, £20. You never know. So you're taking the opportunity not to go for a gig, but just you're out with his mates. You're spending half an hour with a bunch of people, as we do. And people can scan it. So, and if you know, so you might make 10 tips that night or 4 tips that night, but you're out on Saturday night, you know.
It's well, about I think this would work really, really well outside of the streets, James. And I don't know if you've even considered this. It's for restaurant workers. I don't work restaurants as much as I did back in the day. But back in the day, I used to do about 20 restaurants a week. Like I literally did. No, seriously. I had 3 on a Saturday, 3 on a Sunday, and I had 1 or 2 a day. That's all I was doing. And I love restaurant work. And I used to get a ton of tips on top of what I was getting paid. Like I get tips all the time.
Right.
And I used to design these little table tent cards. Yeah. And when I went to and it used to just say on there, hey, your magician tonight is Craig, picture of me and my web address. And I used to just, before I started in the restaurants, I used to just pop these table tents down on the tables so that when I went over to the table, they knew who I was. And when I was pitching the restaurants, I was actually using that as a reason to have me, you know, don't worry about introducing me. I'm going to bring these along. I'll put them on the tables beforehand. I used to get tons of tips. So if I was working restaurants today, I would have these table tents, which is just basically a piece of card. I would just have these designed and I'd just put the QR code on there and it'd say, you know, do you want to buy Craig a beer or something? Scan here and a big arrow pointing towards the QR code. I'd just do my thing, walk up to the table. I'd say, hey guys, if you like that, you know, just scan that QR code. You can buy me a drink later on after I've finished.
Yeah.
And I think that they would. I'm pretty sure I know that you've designed this for street performers, but I think people who are working restaurants, this could massively upsell the amount of money that they're making.
And gee, this is something, Craig, you've 100%, 100, yeah, for sure. And obviously just use the right words, use the right marketing speak or whatever it is, because you're selling something. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of doing a QR code and getting tipped online, I think outweighs 100% anything that a card reader could do. Because I see people on the street doing card readers and I think, well, you're losing money. You're losing connection. There's something being lost by the fact that you're using that. Because if you're doing a QR code, you might have product that you want to sell at the back end, okay, just for the general public, but how do we all, where do we learn to start? Where do we start learning magic because of something else or somebody else that we've seen? So if somebody scans a code and tips you, and on the back end, they go, oh shit, he's teaching magic. Bloody hell fire. I'll buy that as well. And it's, if you've got a card reader, that wouldn't happen. If you've got a QR code and onto a website, onto a tip button, it just makes it easier to follow through. And I don't understand why a lot of buskers don't use it, because rather that's not a field I'm working in now, because that's, I'm leaving that to busk.co. But just card readers, no, get a QR code, do this, sign up for one of them, or the Patreon, whatever you want to do. That's the better way forward, because then there's something else that the spectator can see that you're involved in. And I think there's a better way. That'd be a great idea. And I should put, maybe I will put that in, a bit of training about that in the actual dashboard of the user.
Yeah, I think for restaurant workers, I think this is as valuable for restaurant workers as it is for street performers, because they're in a very similar situation.
Very much.
No, restaurant performers do get paid, but a massive part of the income comes from tips.
Yeah, I mean, I did a couple of times at TGI's in London when I used to live in Brixton. And I would always say, don't give me any, I know I didn't take tips because I was working on the street. if you got a tip, give it to the staff because they get paid for be here. I get paid to have fun. Are we having fun? Yeah, so that was just a line that I thought I'd use, you know, but I never take tips, but now I would. Show me the money. Yeah, I'm not that rational, though, but yeah. So I think we rolled it out in Blackpool. When I had this vision that Blackpool would be such a massive uptake, there was a few uptakes, but people were there to look at the, you know, the shiny new things. You know, I get that. I did that myself. And now we're launching. But I think as regards Blackpool now as a rollout, people getting to know the brand, getting to see the brand. That's why I put it absolutely. That's why we put it absolutely everywhere, apart from the toilets, apart from that VMA. So we're launching at probably the time that this comes out, and we've got some people helping me with that as well, which is
cool. So when is the launch date?
We've not got this. I was going to do it before the end of this month, but my developer is working on certain areas that I just need to get sorted out and resolved to make it the best we can make it at this particular point in time. Version 2, version 3, when that comes out later on down the road, it will have show different currencies. And also, one of the major things is, how can I put it the best way? There's a platform called Gumroad. You've heard of it, right? I think that Christian's got his membership site, which is brilliant, by the way. I'm on it, so it's just brilliant. I heard you mention it before as well when you interviewed him. It's a phenomenal. His work is...
He's amazing. Christian's amazing.
Just fucking blows your mind. So I want something similar where you, the performer, can create something, upload it, and then have it as a product to sell. The person that gets tipped might not have a product, but they can sell that on your behalf. And then because they do that, they get a commission, you get the bulk, and we actually make a little bit of the book because we're hosting it and providing it. So so even if you've not got a product, somebody else's product could be put in front of somebody else's face, but it's not my product. So at the moment, it's just all my product that's there, because that's the way that I'm working. You're seeing that horizon. Want to go up there, want to go up there, want to go up there. That's what we're doing at the moment. So in certainly by the end of this year or in a few months' time, we'll do another launch or another push out to say that we've got this available so that you can actually put your content there and actually benefit from having it sold by other people as well as yourself when you get tipped. And if you look at it, Craig, when you're selling product, it's like, hey, I've got this. Do you want to buy it? It just happened to be a pen. Okay. And then you've got to try and work out how to sell that to somebody. But if you've done something that's amazing, blown somebody's mind, and they're actually laughing and having a great time and clapping, you know what it's like. And I've seen your videos. If they, at that moment, when they tip you and they go, oh, Shelley's got off. Yeah, damn, bam. It's easier to sell that than it is to say, hey, buy this. That's just it's a bit of psychology, repositioning stuff to be sold in a different way, but in a good way.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it's an amazing idea. I think it's a really, really, really good idea. And yeah, I think that I know that you spent a long time putting it together, and
you know, I really think that everybody who's watching this needs to sign up, especially if they're woke straights, especially if they are put into a position where they're you know, getting tips. This is just genius.
It's a no-brainer. And the thing is, it doesn't cost a single solitary penny. Yes, we do take 10% of the tip, but yes, we do also try and make it possible for the spectator to pay you that tip as well, so you get the full amount, and you've got stuff that they may purchase at the back end. So it could be that you earn, you know, more than the actual tip itself. That's all down to the spectator and your connection, but we provide the tool for you to be able to do it. And again, I can't stress this enough, it's free. And when you hear things being free, the thing is a catch. Well, I'm telling you, it's free. There's no catch other than we take 10% of the fee, but if the spectator pays the transaction, you get that. And you've got your own, it's just a lot of time, energy and money is going into it, as you can appreciate. And I'm giving it all away for free. But look, there's big monoliths in the field of money and internet stuff, like PayPal, like Stripe, of two of which we use. And they started off like that, and then they went up like that. The story of PayPal is phenomenal. They spent about £60 million or $60 million to get the customer base that they have. Because they gave away money to get people on board. Look at Uber, did the same thing. So sometimes you have to invest a lot of stuff to get just back a little bit, then a different horizon to see, and you can actually become part of the general landscape, become part of the thing. So Tricks Tip, it's not a product, it's not a trick, it's not a routine, it's not a prop. It's just a way to help magicians get tipped online or offline. By doing exactly what they're doing already, but just a little put a little message in saying, "Hey, tip me." Oh, and we've got training. We will have training for that inside the dashboard as well.
That's great.
And it's free.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it doesn't cost a single solitary penny in any way, shape, or form.
I think you're going to be very successful with that.
Thank you. I hope so too. I've tried a few things, Craig. I've tried to do, when I discovered the internet in 2008, I tried to do something called Magic News Television, which was something about news, reviews, and interviews. I had a nice camera. I got used to working with WordPress and could build a site, so it's not that difficult. But then other things came into view. I was traveling around, and it's just, this is the one thing that I will take to my grave with me. I'm all in on Tricks Tip. I mean, I still work the street, but this could be the last year. I certainly work the festival, but this could be the last, you know, not this, the festival would be the last year, but work the street might be. But I'm all in with Tricks Tip. It's constantly on my, if you speak to any of my friends, any people I hang out with on pitch, like Todd Varys or Matt Keys or Scott, Super Scott, that's all I talk about. I try to keep my mouth shut most of the time, because all that comes out is what I'm thinking.
That's amazing. Well, I can tell you firsthand, trying to put together a platform that's news and reviews and interview, it's hard work. It is such hard work. People don't realize.
Because you do Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix. Between Netflix and Magic TV, I'm basically, you know.
When do you have to gigs?
Hmm?
Do you have any time to do gigs?
I've cut down slightly. I'm only doing about 15 a week now.
Holy shit. Excuse my friend. Bloody hell fire. I bet your wife is like, where the hell's Craig? Where's you know, what a blooming neck, what a structure you've made.
Me and Sarah have a relationship where absence really does make the heart grow fonder. We can be away for a week from each other and we're absolutely fine with it.
So. Yeah, this is staying with myself. I'm not at liberty to talk much about it at the moment for various reasons, but I'm in a position where I finally met somebody that is independent, is as independent in of herself as I am in of myself. And we, it's a lovely thing that we did. Oh, fucking hell, man. It's a lovely thing. Several years ago, Several years ago, I was in Australia and I just took it upon myself to do a selfie video, and WhatsApped it to her. And that was 3.5 years ago. In the morning. So when I was in Australia, I'd do that every morning. I was in Australia for 9 weeks. But that 9 weeks is stretched to 3 years every single morning.
Wow.
Every single morning. Because we're not spending time, we're not living together. Every single morning, I'm doing a little selfie video for her and just sending it to her. Not edited, just raw, you know, sing a little song at the beginning just to lift the spirits and then talk about the day to come, ask her, you know, that's our mode of communication. And then she sends something back and then I reply to that and we catch up as much as we can. It's nice to be with somebody that is independent and actually can carry themselves for themselves and then thoroughly enjoy you when you're with them. So you've got a great space there with, what's your wife's name again?
Sarah. Sarah.
So you've got a great space there with Sarah. So you've got Ryland as well. Have you got any other kids?
I have a daughter called Thea who is more of a dancer than a magician. Although, you know, like most magicians have the wife test, Ryland has the sister test. So when he's working on new stuff, she's brutal. She's seen enough magic to know how a lot of stuff works. So he'll try something on her. And she'll go, no, I saw it in your hand. Saw you do that. And then he gets annoyed, throws the props on the floor, walks off, brings himself back together, goes and tries again. You know, so. Yeah.
And being, he's a young child. He's a young man. He's not a kid anymore. He's, I would think at 9 years old, he's a young man. So he's putting the childhood tantrums behind. I'm not sure because I don't have any kids. But yeah, he's on such a path. And you're quite right to be totally proud of him. Does he still do kids stuff? Does he still go and play with his friends and do
all Yeah. Lego and playing Switch and he does all that. But he spends most of his time doing magic and football. Those are his two things.
Wow. And you should be very proud of him. There's a lot of people that are looking at him going, holy shit, to have such presence on stage as he has. Yeah, he's still 9 years old. Yeah, he's not got the stage presence of David Copperfield. But the thing is, he's a nine-year-old young man and he's starting out and this is him starting out and in the next few years, goodness knows where, if it's still something that he wants to do, because I'm sure you'll back him supporting whatever he wants to do. Gobsmacked. Such stage for a person that young to have that ability. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he comes up with on the next BGT as well.
So am I. Well, when this goes out, we will have done the next round. So
okay, of course.
Let's hope.
He's already a millionaire because he's doing what he loves to do.
Exactly. That's what my dad said to me. If you do what you love to do, you're never going to work a day in your life.
Yeah, exactly, mate. Exactly. That's what my dad said. That's a good call. My dad said to me, he's gone. He died, I think, 1999 or 2000. And he said, when I was working in Tenerife, mum and dad came over to visit, and he saw me on stage doing whatever it was. And he said, oh, you're very good. You're very good. But what you have to do is have something behind you. So not a job, but maybe a product. Sell something. Create something that you can, because you can work on that when you're not doing shows. And I thought, but this was the time of the Brian May catalogues. The internet wasn't around at that time. Mm-hmm. And we had catalogues. I think, department stores. I think, what could I create? What could I build? What could I make? I didn't know anything about distribution. Yada, 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 yada. Nothing. So that just went... didn't happen, but at the back of my mind, and then now as it comes to pass, I want what I'm doing now to be the mainstay of what I want to do. And if I do go and work the streets, I'll be still doing it for the money. Well, I'll still be doing it, the money aspect will be there, but moreover, because I won't need it financially, it's just to hang out with my mates and enjoy doing what I'm doing already, you know. So that's in time to come. But parents, they mold us, Craig.
They do indeed. Mm. Well, let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
You've said a few times this might be your last year on the streets.
Yeah.
As somebody who's basically spent their entire life on the streets, that's a scary proposition, right? I know this because my wife says to me, look, you're running all these businesses, start performing a bit less. I'm like, no, because I'm a performer. It's what I do. It doesn't matter how busy I am doing this or that or the other. I'm always going to perform because that's what I love to do. So, you know, and the thought of me performing less, just, I hate it. I hate the thought of it. So what's your plans moving forward? Because let's be honest, you've achieved a hell of a lot. You've traveled around, I mean, we just heard your accolades. You've traveled around the world twice. You've performed in every single major country that there is. You've made a living doing what you love. You've helped other street performers. You are a huge name in the magic community. You've now bought out this platform, which I genuinely believe from speaking to you about it, is going to be something that's going to revolutionize you know, that aspect of magic moving forward. You've achieved a lot.
nobody would, you know, nobody would say anything if you were like, you know, you disappeared into obscurity. And I know you're not going to do that. But what's your plans moving forward? What's your reasons for? What's your reason for giving it up? In terms of maybe this is your last year, and what's your plans moving forward if that does happen?
I can tell there's some of the things that I can talk about, but some of the things I can't for various reasons, which I won't go into. But having said that, my reasoning for saying that this is, I want to give up straight is because I'm 60 years old and I've seen others of my age and they're still doing it. And there's no disrespect, none intended, none meant. It's just that wouldn't be for me. I don't want to be banging a stick on the street when I'm 61. Yes, the festival, of course, because that's when there's a lot of people around. But as my mainstay of income, is the main thing I want to do, to go out to the street, stand on the street, bang a stick, get a crowd, make them, and do the same thing again and again and again. I'm just like, a bit over it. There's no disrespect to the performance, to the genre or anything. It's since time immemorial, street performance has been around for years and years. It's just that I feel it's at the age I am, I don't want to be doing it as my main source of income, my main thing. I remember 5 years ago when I was living in Brisbane, I was on the balcony having a cigarette. I don't smoke anymore. Having a cigarette and a beer, and I wrote down, in 5 years' time, I don't want to be doing this. Instead of not wanting to do this, I want to be working towards this. I want to be doing something else. Giving up, not because I want to get rid of it. Giving up because I want to move forward to something different and what I, in my mind, is better. And what would be better is spending more time with the person that's in my life, which I can't really go into too much detail about. Spending time with that person in my life and actually living together in an idyllic way, which would necessitate me being away from any area where there's a built-up group of people that I could do shows for. Yes, it might be travel to do a festival, but that would be very, very, that would be a regular thing, and make my income from my internet exploits, what I want to do on the internet, what I want Trickstip to do for other people, is say we take a little bit, which would help exponentially if we had the numbers. So that's where I want to be. So to be able to enjoy the twilight of my life with the person that I love. And that's basic. I think that's basically what it is. That's what I've been working towards for the past 5 years. It's something I said 5 years ago. It's come back. I'm thinking, oh, this is possible. So that's what I want to do. As I say, no disrespect to the genre or the field of street performing. It's just that I just want to do something different. And performance-wise, yeah, I'll probably still do a festival here or there. But these are the words the Gazzo's said, for example. He's given up, but guess what? He's still back at it. So it might be just words just now, but it's what I truly believe. But further down the line, people might say, oh, you said, yeah, but things have changed. Things can always change, but that's what my push forward is. And rather than doing what I'm doing, do something different. Does that make any sense?
It does. It completely makes sense.
Yeah. On that, here's just a thought that people can take away from. I read this in the late Tommy Wonder's books, Books of Wonder. What's more important is to talk about where you're going rather than where you've been, because I think it gave a parallel or an allegory. To say, I'm leaving the village to go and live in the city. Well, it's inherent that when you're going to live in the city, you're going to be leaving the village, so talk more about what you're going to be doing rather than what you're leaving behind. I'm not running away from something, I'm running towards something, which gives a different mindset to actually be more successful in that particular area that you're going to. If that makes any sense as well.
It really does make sense.
Oh, cheers, awesome. What else can I tell you about? I've got a whole list of things here. Oh, Marvin's Magic. I used to work for him, but I've told you about that. Just let me share this if I may. Yeah. I've been looking at some of the interviews that you've done, Ian Kendall. They're all great. I didn't spend too much time on them. But one that I did watch a bit was Christian Grace. And like yourself, I saw him in Blackpool. Never knew the guy before, never heard of him.
Then I'm his biggest fan. I tell everyone about him all the time. I think Christian's amazing.
He's just his thinking. Now, with a hangover, I went into the dealer's door in Blackpool. And I'm not one to try and waste anybody's time rather than having showing something because I'm not going to buy it because I don't need anything, I don't need any more magic. But they walk through Vanishing Ink's big stand, how big they get now, right? And Christian was there and he's very affable, he's very pleasant, he's very pleasing. So I'll show you that I'm not interested, but Christian, I'm not going to buy anything here because I knew his name because I'd seen him earlier. No, just let me show you that. And he showed me Switch One. And you know when you're watching it, you know his head's the name, you know you're going to see a Switch, right? Could I see it? No. I burned his hands. I bought it. I did buy it with the wallet, but it's impossible. You can't see the Switch. It's totally impossible. So if you're out there and you've not got Switch One, get Switch One. It's a great trick.
Switch One is amazing. And how I use the wallet, you know, like you suggest having it as like an index.
Yeah.
I always struggled with that.
Yeah.
But how I use it is I actually, when I've had them name the card, I actually bring it out as a wallet.
Yeah.
And I open it up to take a bill out to put on the table.
Yes.
And then I steal it and I put the wallet away.
Oh, yes, because, I think he mentioned that in some of his tutorials as well. I'm not sure.
I can't remember. But,
yeah. But that's a great idea. That's a brilliant idea. Instead of trying to surreptitiously take some. It's so clean. It's just so clean. I mean, I've done the card in box, cards sold, cards chosen, signed, lost, top palm, Pegasus fold, or more over than not a Pegasus fold, and then open up the tin, do the Jennings optical toss, and that's the card. I mean, it works, but it's a bit not clunky or a bit heavy-handed. It's just just feels. But then you look at Christian Grace's Switch One. He takes the card up, opens the card, and it's your card. And it's like, what the fuck?
I know.
Yeah, well,
very, he's
well,
very irritating. He's irritatingly good. Whenever I start to develop a massive ego, which I do on a regular basis, I just go and watch some of Christian's material, and I realise I'm actually quite average.
All right, okay. Because I remember seeing you on the Wizard project with you, and I remember you saying why you left because it was the schlep to get there and back was really quite long, and you had many other things going on in your life, and it's taken on a life of its own. You got your own stuff going on as well.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun on the Wizard Product Review, but it's like everything. It's like you with the streets. All good things come to an end. And the only way to deal with it is to rip the Band-Aid off. I have people saying to me, you should come back once a month and go back every couple of months. And it's like, no, when you've made a decision to do something, you need to do it. You can't say you're not going to do this and still dip your toe in. It's either all or nothing for me. So
fair enough. And you're busy. I know this is, you don't want this about this and be about you, but you're extremely busy. I've never seen anybody as busy. I mean, I'm sure David Copperfield is just as busy, but I've never seen anybody that I know that I can actually connect with as busy as you. You're crazy.
Yeah.
Not crazy good, but it's fucking hell, man.
Yeah. It's, I've got very good time management, which I have to because I'm constantly, the hard part is fitting in between one thing or another. Like, doing an interview with you, and then I'm going straight onto a meeting with Murphy's Magic, and then I've got to rehearse with Ryland, and then after that I've got to deal with something with my kids' entertainment company and an entertainer there, and then I there's so many different things.
Do you write down lists, Craig? And this might be of a help. Do you write down, what time did you get up this morning, for example, if you don't mind me asking?
Six.
6 o'clock, so you're an early riser.
Mm-hmm.
So you can manage to get things done.
Yeah.
So I'm a lazy slob at the moment. I used to go out walking and I lost 25 kilograms because of walking. Well, the Pablo Escobar's family weren't too happy about it, but never mind. Joke. So I had to get up around about 8 or 9 o'clock, but I could fit in a walk. I should get up early in the morning and be as productive as others that I know. Here's another joke from the street, if you don't mind. I like this, I'll create this one. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't use any rude words because we've got minors here. Pause. But then again, if it wasn't for the late Margaret Thatcher, we'd have more miners. That's a very subtle intellect. It's a very subtle joke. People of a certain age get it. People, kids, who the hell's Margaret Thatcher and what's a miner?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want to use any material there. It just came to me. The brain just goes like this.
I love that. I do.
So
I love that.
Time management is something that you're obviously very, very good at because you're doing so many different things. But it's coming to, you've got to get prepared for your meeting.
I have. I want to ask you one more question before we end
up. Fair enough.
which is, you've mentioned a few times, and I meant to ask you earlier, and we went on to a different subject. You've mentioned a couple of times about an app that you developed in COVID.
An app?
Something that you developed in COVID?
Oh, yes, sorry, yes. That wasn't an app. It was a product.
Well, let's talk about that, because I don't know anything about this.
I forgot. It's something that's way back in the day. Basically, it's a tutorial course where people can... it's a bunch of videos, PDFs, and lectures. And, it's not a membership site. It's a product that you can access on the internet, on the online, and you've got your own account, and you can access all the videos that teach you this and teach you that, and teach you how to do certain slight hand maneuvers, and all leading towards the ambitious card. And it's then you can actually use these slides for different effects that you might want to do. And you can actually use these pieces, these sleight of hand there, obviously to do an ambitious card. And it's just basically the ambitious, I sold it on the back of the ambitious card. There's a lot of people doing ambitious card tutorials. So, but you can actually use the sleight of hand for other things. Like, for example, there's videos teaching you the optical, obviously crediting where crediting is due. The Led Jennings optical toss, the Hollingworth leg turnover, which is really quite simple. I've even got the second card from the top one-handed top palm in it, which is, I think, apparently Marlowe created this way before even I thought of it, but it's not something I've ever used in public practice, in public, the one-handed bottom palm, the Jennings one-handed bottom. So it's basically videos teaching these things, and then there's ways of putting it together to create an ambitious card. It's called Ambition Omnibus, and people can get it at ambitionomnibus.com. Think.
Wow, that sounds like a great resource.
That's all right.
How much is it?
There's $24.95. There's many people. I don't push it, but there's many people with better, with, like Craig, like your thing, Netflix. That would be way better. Christian Grace's his Magic Monthly, really, really good. Steve Faulkner, I would rather go with those than buy mine. Not that mine is bad, but I just don't like, you know, saying buy.
But if somebody likes the ambitious card, that sounds like a great resource.
Yeah, I think it would be. Yeah, be interesting to see if anybody takes it up, and also hear what any comments would be about it.
Mm.
That'd be cool. Yeah, that wasn't an app; it was a particular product. Green screening. It's a lot of fun putting together a video, sitting at the video screen. I mean, like, you know what it's like when you're editing. You're in this tunnel, and you're just editing, yeah. And things come to you. I mean, you've got some great intros and outros for your stuff. Where did you get the intros and outros that you use?
My marketing team made them, because I've got an office of people. So that's one of the reasons that I can be so busy. I've got a head office with 12 members of staff.
Wow, so you've got payroll to meet as well.
Yeah, so I've got 12 members of staff. Three and a half in marketing.
Right.
Three in sales, two in ops, and the rest in admin.
Bloody hell, fire. So you're not just doing all that you're doing. You're actually managing a team, or you've probably got management in there as well. But you've got a payroll to meet, or whatever degree.
My official title is sales and marketing director of the various different companies. I made Sarah managing director because she was an ex-head teacher, and she's the most organized person I've ever met. And she's incredible with money and finances. And if I was put in charge of all this different stuff, would have gone bankrupt years ago, but I'd have a warehouse of really cool shit. So, you know.
You just want to perform. You just want to get out there, make things happen. All the other stuff, I can't do the admin. Yeah, it's quite a challenge.
Yeah, well, I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm bad at. And I like to stick to what I'm good at, because if I try to do the stuff that I'm bad at, I'll just make it worse.
Yeah. And you've figured out where your forte lays, and you just put all into that and let everybody else look after everything else. Obviously, you've got to manage certain things, have got to be managed at certain times. But yeah, you're doing great, man. You're doing really, really. I mean, I'm sure as proud as you are of Ryland, he's as proud of you as you are of him.
Well, Ryland's my everything. He's you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
My goal is to help him hit his goals, whatever they may be.
Yeah. Well, you're getting there, mate. You're getting there. Well, now you've got a meeting at 11.
Yeah, I've got to jump off in a bit, but man, this has been an incredible interview. Like, it has been awesome. So if people want to connect with you on social media, I'm going to put some links
down below right now. So first of all, if people want to check out the Ambitious Card product, which is everything about the Ambitious Card, that was the Ambitious Omnibus.
AmbitionOmnibus.com.
AmbitionOmnibus.com. And if people want to check out the new tip tricks, where would they go for that?
I'm going to give you a special link for that, but it's just go to trickstip.com just now. Trickstip.com, you'll find. If you go to trickstip.com/try, I've actually set up a page, set up a process whereby you can actually experience it yourself. You don't have, and you have, and you go through the shopping cart, you go through everything else, and you get access to the XYZ. It doesn't cost you a single penny, but you will have to put a copy and paste a credit card number or PayPal thing that they ask, that the platform asks you to do, but you're not having to pay anything. No card details are passed. It's what's
just
called,
so you can see what the process is for a credit
card. And so the card is in sandbox mode, so that's a common term. And so it's trickstip.com/try. And then they can actually see from themselves. And then from there, they can choose whether or not they want to sign up. And a lot of people have, so.
That's amazing.
And on social media, jameshessler.com. On YouTube, jameshessler.com. I've not been attending to my YouTube channel. I did have big plans for it last year, but then other things got in the way. It just went, I don't have the tenacity that you have when I don't have a 12.
I think it's less tenacity and more stupidity, to be perfectly honest.
Possibly, mate, possibly. Well, this has been great, Craig. Thanks so much for taking the time, man. I know it's been a long time coming.
You are more than welcome. And I'm so glad I've had you on the platform. I really want everyone to go check out everything that you do. And I want everyone to sign up because, as James said, and without reiterating the points any further, it's free. So you can sign up for a free account. And even if you might not need it now, there might be some point down the road where you're in a situation where you think, you know what, I could get tips from this.
Yeah.
So, you know, why not set up an account and have it when you need it, have it for when you need it? So I want everybody to go and do that. And more importantly, I want everyone to leave comments in the video down below. I'm sure James will see it.
I'd love to see what people think. And excuse the red face. It's just a condition that I've got. I mean, I get up in the morning, have a shave, and then I put cream on. It's I don't drink excessively, and I just think I've got really red skin.
Yeah. Oh, you look good. You look good.
Thank you. I'm not doing too badly. Thank you.
You look fantastic. Like I said, genuinely, I can't believe you're 60. That's just make me feel.
I know, crazy.
Anyway, guys, make sure that you leave a comment down below. Make sure you go check out everything James does. I will be back again with another video soon, right here on Magic TV. But thank you once again, James, for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Have a great day, mate. Enjoy where you are.
And you. Guys, see you again.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be
magic.
Sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV. Or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.